Morning, everyone. Today's daf is Baba Kama daf Kuf Hey. We are holding at the top of Kuf Hey Amud Aleph, 8 lines down from the top. Chutz Mipachas Shabbat Prutu B'Karen, where the Gemara is quoting from the Mishnah that we had seen earlier. The Gemara on Amud Aleph today is basically going to discuss various cases of halves. Let's say you stole something from somebody and you returned half of it. You have to return the other half. Let's say a Nazir had a requirement to shave his head and he shaved half of it, or half of what was required. What does that say about the other half? And then the Gemara on Amud Beis is going to talk about various cases of denying a claim that you stole from somebody and related cases to that. So we'll start with Chutz Mipachas Shabbat Pruta B'Karen. The Mishnah had said that if you have less than a Shabbat Pruta of the principle of something that you stole, you would not be obligated to find the guy and return it to him. So the Gemara wants to pick up with that discussion. Amar of Papa, Lo Shanu Ela She'ein Gzela Kayamet. It's only true that if you have less than a Shabbat Pruta of theft, you would not be obligated to seek out the person and return it to him if that Pachos Mishabbat Pruta is no longer in the world, no longer existent. Aval, Gzela Kayemes, Tzarech Leilech Acharav. If you do have that Pachos Mishabbat Pruta, it's still existent, it's still present, you would have to take it to the person from whom you stole it. Why? Because Chayshinan Shemetiyaker. Because we're concerned that it might increase in value. It may be true that it's Pachos Mishabbat Pruta now, it's less than a Shabbat Pruta, and therefore you don't really have any responsibility towards it. But if it becomes worth a Shabbat Pruta in the future, you'd be obligated to return it, and therefore we're going to require you to return it even now, even when it's still Pachos Mishabbat Pruta.
Wouldn't it be his?
Sorry?
You'd acquire it as your own when it's Pachos Mishabbat Pruta?
We say Mishalim B'Shas Gzela.
Right, and therefore what? If it increases in value, it would remain yours?
It should be yours.
Right, I think Rav Papa would say, maybe even if you say that it's yours, once it becomes worth more than a Shabbat Pruta, it's no longer yours.
Wasn't there a principle, Gzea Klal, Kol HaGazlonim Mishalim B'Shas Gzela?
Right. But that doesn't always hold.
Doesn't always hold true?
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how Rav Papa would type that.
That was your question.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's another version, so maybe
it's
this
two
will
to
save
one,
us.
So
there's another version of Rav Papa, so maybe this will save us.
If you would have originally stolen less than
a Shabbat Pruta,
would there
have
been a
chayv
to return it?
Presumably not, but maybe there's a difference between when you originally steal a Shabbat Pruta and when Pachos Mishabbat Pruta, and when there's less than a Pachos Mishabbat Pruta left of something that was bigger.
If it's never a chiyuv of...
Because the gzela doesn't register.
Yeah, to return the gzela, then there's no chiyuv to go gzela. But if there was originally a chiyuv and then it became reduced, so then it's not the same. Heishev Zagazela never existed because it was always less than a Shabbat Pruta.
Right. That might not be the same.
It's not the same as when the requirement of a Heishev Zagazela existed at one point.
Exactly. But there is another version of Rav Papa, so maybe this will save us. Ika da'amri, I'm a Rav Papa. Lo shna gzela kayemes, lo shna she'en gzela kayemes, enu tzarech leilech acharav, l'shem t'yakir lo chayshinin. Says this second version of Rav Papa. It doesn't matter if this Pachos Mishabbat Pruta of theft is still existent or not. Even if it is, you would not have to return it because we're not concerned that it's going to increase in value. So I don't know if that's saying...
That doesn't answer the question.
Right.
It sounds like a different thing.
Right. It's a different thing that we're not concerned that it's going to increase in value.
It could, and it might be a problem, right, but we're not concerned about it.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Yeah. Fine. So that's Rav Papa's principle about returning less than a Shabbat Pruta of the principle. Now, Amar Rava, Gazel Shalosh Agudos B'Shalosh Pruto V'Huzlu V'Amdu Ashtayim. Says Rava, if a person steals three bundles of something that are worth three Prutos cumulatively, one Pruta per bundle, and then they decrease in value, and they are only worth two pruto between the three of them, right? Two-thirds of a pruto for each one. Im hichzer lo shtayim, chayav lahachzer lo acheres. If you return two of the bundles, and now you're left with only one bundle, which in this case is less than a shabbat pruto, because all three are only worth two, then this one is only worth two-thirds of a pruto, you'd still be obligated to return the third bundle that's worth less than a shabbat pruto to the person. V'tanatuna, and we have a brisa which supports that, because the brisa says, Gazol chametz ve'avar alav ha-pesach, omer lo harei shalchal lefanecha. If a person stole chametz, and then it became chametz ve'avar alav ha-pesach, Pesach occurred and turned this chametz into something that doesn't have any value, you could still return it to the person and just say, here's your chametz, I give it back to you. And the Gemara infers from that, that time of the Issa Be'ene, the only reason you could tell the person, here's your chametz back, just take it, is because it's still existent, it's still in its exact form. Halese Be'ene, but if you don't have it in the world, or it's not in its exact form, then Af Agav D'Hashta Lav Mamonehu, even though now that chametz Shavar Lava Pesach, wherever it is not worth anything because it's Aser, Since initially it was worth monetary value, before Pesach happened, it was just regular chametz, which is fine, which is permitted and has value, you would have to return it. When you don't have it in the world, you'd have to pay for it. So hachanami, afagav the hashta lo shavu pruta, the same can be said about this third bundle, which used to be worth the whole shavu pruta, and now is only worth 2/3 of a shavu pruta, that even though now it's worth less than a shavu pruta, came in the meikara havi shavu pruta, ba'ish lume. Since initially it was worth an entire shavu pruta, you would still have to return
that's
it.
That's something like we just mentioned.
That's similar to Rav Papa.
No, that's something that's similar to the answer we gave as the distinction between stealing less than a shavu pruta and stealing a shavu pruta that became cheap.
Right. I mean, because initially it was worth
initially,
the shavu pruta.
Initially, there was
right,
a requirement of Behesha Vesek
Zewa. Yeah, 100%. 100%. So we have that. My answer, Rav Papa. Good. Now, Bayi Rava. Rava has a question related to this din that he just told us about stealing three bundles. Gazel shtei agudos pruta, v'hichzir lo achas mehen, ma'u. Says Rava, let's say you steal two bundles, which are worth one pruta, I think it's saying cumulatively, for sure. So each bundle is only worth a half a pruta, and then you have to return both bundles, but you only return one of them. So now mahu, what do we say about returning the second bundle? Miam rinan hashta leka gzela, and the Bach adds gabe. Do we say that since you returned one of the bundles and you only have one left, you don't have the gzela anymore? Because what was the gzela? The gzela was two bundles, and you don't have two bundles anymore. So would we say you don't have the gzela in your hands, and therefore you don't have to return the second bundle? Odilma or do we say that you haven't returned all the gzela that you had by you? So you do still have to return the second bundle. Meaning there are two ways of looking at it. If you had two bundles and you returned one of them, does that mean you no longer have the gzela because you returned one? Or does that mean you haven't fully returned the gzela because you still have one? So hadar pashta, gzela ein kan, hashava ein kan. Rava then answers this question with a cryptic statement, which Gemara is about to clarify. But he says, gzela ein kan, that you don't have the theft, but also hashava ein kan, that you have not returned the gzela. So ask the Gemara the obvious question, gzela ein kan, hashava yesh kan. If you don't have the gzela anymore, then you have properly returned the gzela, because you're telling me that what you have left in your possession is not the gzela. That must mean that you returned it. So how do we explain both gzela ein kan and hashava ein kan? That doesn't make sense. So says the Gemara, Hachikamar, Afal Pish, Gzela Einkan, Mitzvas Hashava Einkan. Gemara clarifies and says, no, you're right. Even though you don't have the Gzela in your possession, still we're saying you haven't fulfilled the Mitzvah of Hashava. So it really strikes this balance. By returning one of the bundles, you no longer have the Gzela by you. But by not returning both bundles, you also haven't fulfilled the Mitzvah of Beheshev Esek Gzela Asher Gozel. So what Rava would say is you're obviously obligated to return the second bundle in this case, even though you've removed the gzela from your possession, because you haven't done that fully, right? We do view the two bundles collectively as the whole gzela, and therefore, so long as you don't have both of them, you no longer have the gzela. But as far as returning the gzela, we also view the two bundles collectively, and you'd have to return both of them. So if you only return one of them, you're not going to be off the hook. The Amar Rava, and now Rava has a related case in question, in the discussion of a nazir. Amarava, Hare Amru, Nazir Shigileach, Vashir, Shtesaros, Lo Asa Veloklum. Rava says that at the end of the process of a naziris, when a person has to shave all of his hair, if he shaves almost all of his hair, but he leaves over two hairs, then he hasn't fulfilled the mitzvah of Giluach. I think Tosus here says maybe it doesn't mean that he hasn't fulfilled the mitzvah of Giluach. It may just mean that you can't yet drink wine and be Matam Lemesim. But no, maybe it means that you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah of Giluach. So why is that? Because we assume that two hairs is significant. It's sort of like on Hilchos Shabbos. We assume two letters are significant. Things come in pairs. So if you leave two hairs over, that's considered a complete shiur, and you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah of Giluach, of shaving your hair at the end of your naziris. So Bayi Rava asks Rava a question. Gileach achas, benoshra achas, ma'u. Let's say you have two hairs left. So you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah of Giluach. And what you need to do to fulfill the mitzvah of Giluach is to shave both of those hairs. And then what happens? You shave one of the hairs, and then the second hair, the only hair that you have left, falls out. So what's the din? Have you fulfilled the mitzvah of Giluach? Have you fulfilled the mitzvah of shaving your head, or have you not? So Amar le Rav Acha Midifti le Ravina. Rav Acha Midifti asks Ravina about this question that Rava is posing here. And he asks, Nazir shegileach achas achas kamei ba'alei le Rava? Is Rava wondering whether a nazir who shaves his head one by one has fulfilled the mitzvah of Giluach? It's obvious that if you shave your head one by one, but you remove all the hairs, that does fulfill the mitzvah of Giluach. And the Gemara is assuming that the same would be true if the last hair, the only one that you have left, falls out, even if you didn't shave it. So what's the question here? It seems to be obvious that this would fulfill the mitzvah gilah, right? Let's see the Rashi.
What's halacha if you shave one by one and you leave one over?
If you shave one by one and you leave one over, presumably we should say that
that should be a done deal.
It should be a done deal. Why? Because it was only if you leave two over that it's not a done deal. But if you leave one,
so what should be the question that he asked if one left over, one fell out?
You're saying, why did he ask this question? Yeah. That you have. As opposed to just saying, what happens if you just leave one over and it doesn't fall?
The Gemara is going to change the order, right?
Right.
Okay, but the Hapamina, what's the problem?
Well, so I've asked the question. Let's see the Rashi, but that's Racha Midifti's question to Ravina. He doesn't understand why Rava would even ask this question because it seems obvious that it should work, right? Let's see Rashi. Dibra Maskel Amalei Rav Acha. It's right across from where Rava started in the Gemara of Amar Rava. So Amalei Rav Acha, the Ravina, Nazir Shegileach Kol Asaros Achas Achas Kami Bailei Bitmiya. Rav Acha Midifti says to Ravina, I don't understand. Is Rava asking what happens if you shave one hair by one hair? Kalomar Havadai Giluach Havi. That's obviously going to be a good mitzvah of Giluach. Kevin Shebesho Shebaligaleach, since at the time that you're coming to shave your head, Hai Shir Havabe Shir Giluach. Since at the time that you're coming to shave whatever is left, let's say it's the two hairs in this case, that is considered a shir giluach, that's enough hair to fulfill the mitzvah of shaving, the gilach achas, and you shaved one of them, the apapi denashra shnia giluachu. Even though the second one then fell out, that's still considered a giluach, because you started with a proper shir of hair to fulfill the mitzvah, and you basically shaved one by one. So for sure, that case is going to be a good giluach. So Rav Acha Midifti doesn't even understand the question that Rav is asking. So Amar Le responds Ravina to Rav Acha Midifti, Lo Tzricha, Rav's question really is needed for a case where Kegon Shenoshar Achas Mehen V'Gileach Achas. Right, as Rudy mentioned, the Gemara flips the order now. A person shaves all his hair, but he leaves two hairs over. So we know that does not fulfill the mitzvah of giluach. And then the first of the two hairs falls out, and then he shaves the second of the two hairs. So what's the din in that case? Miyam rinan hashta miyas halekashir. Do we say that now that both hairs are removed, you no longer have a shear of hair, and therefore you have fulfilled the mitzvah of giluach? Odilma halav giluachu. The meikara hashir sheisaros. The hashta ki gileach lo havi beisaros. Or do we say that this is not a good mitzvah of giluach? Why? Because initially you shaved your whole head, but you left over two hairs, so that's not a good giluach. And now when you're coming to shave your head, you're not really shaving two hairs because the first hair that was removed of the two fell out. It wasn't shaved. So you never even came to shave two hairs. Mimela, you shouldn't fulfill the mitzvah of giluach in such a case. So those are the two sides to the question. Do we say at the end of the day you don't have any hair anymore and therefore you fulfill the mitzvah? Or do we say since you didn't actually shave two hairs, you really only shaved one hair, the first of the two hairs fell out, that would not be a good giluach. So Hadar Pashta says the Gemara. The Gemara then answered. Rava really answered his own question. Sear ein kan, giluach ein kan. Using a very similar formulation to what we just found by the Gzela, that we say there's no hair here, there's no hair left, but giluach ein kan, you also haven't shaved, you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah of shaving. So ask the Gemara again the same question. Yiseir ein kan, giluach yesh kan. If there's no hair left, then you have fulfilled the mitzvah of giluach, because you need to remove the hair. You're telling me you've removed the hair. That's the mitzvah of giluach. So answers the Gemara, hach kamar. Afal pi, sheseir ein kan, mitzvahs giluach ein kan. Well, what the Gemara means is, even though there's no hair, you still haven't fulfilled the mitzvah of giluach. Even though there's no hair, you have nothing left, and therefore you should have fulfilled the mitzvah. Since you didn't do giluach on two hairs, you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah of giluach. Now Rava has another case, a case of halves, by Tuma and Tara. Amar Rava, Hare Amru, Chavis Shenikva, Vistamua, Shmarim, Hitzilua. Says Rava, if you have a barrel which becomes punctured, and then dregs, let's say, of wine, close up the puncture in the barrel, Hitzilua, they would save it from any Tuma which is in the house. Let's see Rashi, just to clarify that case. Chavit shenikma v'sadmu ashmarim. If you have a barrel which became punctured and then got closed up with dregs, v'nanua al pi aruba, and the Bach adds in here, umimareach yafes vivosea. Let's say they put it on top of a skylight and they close up around the barrel, v'tumah babayis, and there is tumah in the house, matzeles al ha'aliyah kula milovo bashum tumah. The barrel has the ability to save the entire attic, the entire upper part of the house, from any tuma transferring from the house where the mace is up to the aliyah. The stima shmarim stimahi. Why? Because we assume that the filling of the barrel that the dregs of the wine make in the barrel is a good closing. It closes up the barrel. The lo shalta be tuma, and tuma is no longer going to apply to the chavis and going upwards through the skylight towards the attic. So if a barrel which becomes punctured, which would pose a major problem, is then filled up by the dregs, we assume that solves the problem, and you don't have to worry about tuma through this barrel. The barrel can work to close up the skylight. So bayi rava, agaf chetzia mahu. Let's say you have a puncture which is just the right size to be problematic, and then you seal up half of that puncture in the barrel. Would that work to save the barrel, just like the dregs filling it up, or no? Let's just see Rashi one more time. Agaf, lashon megufa, it's like a lid or a closing. Agaf chetzia, if you fill up half of it. Haya ba tachtea shir nekev letame. Let's say in the barrel there was a hole that was big enough to be metame the kli and not save it from tuma. But kli avikabo tuma, ino chotzis bifnei tuma. If the barrel is going to receive tuma, then it can't work to block the tuma from going up to the attic. The agaf betit chetzia mahu, and let's say you close up half of that hole, does that save the barrel or not? Mi amrinan hashta mi aleka shir nekev, and this is how it parallels the previous questions that we've asked. Do we say that since you've closed up half of the hole, and only the whole hole was big enough, so do we say that since you closed up half of the hole, you no longer have a hole that's big enough to pose a problem for tuma? Odilma halosasam shir stima. Or do we say no, you haven't properly closed up the entire shir, and therefore it's still subject to tuma? So that's Rav's question. Agav chetzia mahu. Amar le Rav Yemar le Rav Ashi, lav mishnatenu hizo. So Rav Yemar says to Rav Ashi, I don't understand what Rav is asking. Isn't this a beferish mishnah? Titznan, because the mishnah says that chavit shenikva besatmu ashmarim hitzilua. If you have a barrel, this is what we just quoted a second ago. If you have a barrel which got a hole in it and you close it up with it became closed up with dregs, that would save the tumma of the barrel. Pakika bezmura. If you close up the hole on your own with a vine, you would have to apply some material and smooth over the entire hole to make sure that nothing can get in or out where this vine is filling the hole. Hayubashtayim, if you're using two vines to close up the hole, then ad shiyamareach minatzdadim uvein zmura lechaverta. Then you also need to apply this material around the sides of the hole and also between the two vines. So says Rav Yemar, trying to infer from this Mishnah the answer to Rava's question. It's taima de marach, halo marach, lo. It sounds like from the Mishnah that the only way you can close up the hole with the vines is if you apply some material and smooth out the surface to close up the hole properly. But if you do not close up the hole properly, then it would not save the tumah of the barrel. So ask the Gemara, or Rav Yemar, still trying to infer the answer from the Mishnah, amai v'tehavi ki agav chetzia. Why is it that you need to close up the hole with the material and make sure that it's fully closed? It should just be the same as closing half of the hole. It's not going to be a complete proper closure, but it should still partially solve the problem. So if Rava's question of agav chetzia, if you close up half of the hole is even a question, then presumably in this case, you shouldn't be required to close up the material and seal off the hole. Since you are required to do that, it sounds like agav chetzia would not save the hole. So responds really Ravashi probably, or the Gemara, to Rav Yemar's point that hachi hashta, that's not comparable at all. Hatam ilo marach lokai. There, where you're closing up the hole with a vine, if you don't apply some material to the sides, it's not going to work to close up the hole at all. But agav chetzia b'midi dekai kai. If you close up half of the hole with something that's significant, something which can actually stop anything from coming in or out of the barrel, that would actually work. That would actually accomplish something. So this Mishnah, where we're talking about closing something up with a vine, and we say that you have to apply some material to make sure it's a proper closure, but if you were not to apply a proper material, then it wouldn't work, is not comparable to the case of agav chetzia, because the types of closure that we're dealing with, the types of subpar closures that we're dealing with, are not comparable. Agav chetzia is going to be a much better closure, and that's why it was at least a question for Rava if this could work or not, and the Gemara seems to leave that question unresolved.
Lokoi means it's not lasting?
Literally, kai means to stand. So I don't think it means lasting, but I think it means protective. It's not going to stop anything from coming in or out of the barrel.
And the wine will fall out.
Oh, it's not lasting. It's loose.
It's loose.
Right, it's not a good closure.
Yeah, okay.
But agav chetzia, if you're using something which is good, b'midi dekai, the type of material that stands and that will remain and fully block up the closure, then that'll actually work. That'll actually accomplish something. So in anido domalaraya, this Mishnah that we're bringing to try to say Rav's question should have been obvious, and presumably it should have been obvious that Agav Chetzer does not work, is not a good proof. The Amar Rav, says Rav, Hare Amru, the rabbis told us that Gazol Chametz Vavar Lava Pesach, Omer Lo, Hare Shilcha L'Shanecha. If you steal Chametz and Pesach occurs, and it becomes Chametz Vavar Lava Pesach, you could just return it to the person and say, here's your item. Boy Rav, so asks Rav a question related to that. Nishba Lav Mahu. Let's say you make a shvua that you did not steal somebody's chametz that was avar alav pesach, and it turns out that you lied about that shvua. Do you have to do anything? Do you have any responsibility for making that shvua? Miam rinan kevan de imignav bayishlumele mamona bayishlumele mamona kakafrele. Do we say that even though it's chametz shavar alav pesach and it has no value, if it would be stolen from you, you would have to pay money to the person because you can't just say, Areshal Chalif Anecha, you no longer have it. And therefore, since you would have to pay if it was stolen from you, it must be that really this Chametz Shavar Alav Pesach is treated like money. And when you make a shvua about it, that's as if you made a shvua about real money and you would have the normal obligations of somebody who makes a shvua that he didn't steal from somebody, but then it turns out that he did. Odilma hashdamias hamanach v'afra be'almahu v'lo kafrele mamon. Or do we say that at the end of the day, this Chametz Shavar Alav Pesach is still around, even if, whatever, it's basically still worth nothing. It's just dirt. And you haven't been kofir mamon. So the question is, are we going to assess this Chametz Shavar Alav Pesach to be mamon? Because if somebody stole it from you, you'd have to pay, and that would be mamon. Or do we say the Chametz still is just sitting around, seemingly in your rishus, and is just treated like dirt? It's not worth anything, so it's not mamon, and you're not obligated for this shvua that you made. So it says the Gemara, Milta di Baile L'Rava, Pshita L'Rava. This question that Rava has, something that Rava is wondering about, is actually obvious to Rava. How do we see that? The Amar Rava, because Rava says, let's say a person says to another person, Shori Ganavta, you stole my ox, Behu Omer Lo Ganavti, and the person responds, no, I did not steal your ox. So ask the person who's claiming that his ox was stolen, Mativo Etzlecha, then why do you have my ox? I see that you do have my ox. What are you doing with it if you didn't steal it? And the person responds and says, Shomer Chinam Ani Alav. He says, I'm a Shomer Chinam. And then it turns out that really he's not a Shomer Chinam. He wasn't an unpaid watchman for this ox, but he actually stole it. Chayav, the Gemara says, you'd be Chayav in such a case. Why? Shere Patar Atzmo Migneva Vaveda. Because when you lied and said that you were a Shomer Chinam, you were trying to exempt yourself from Gneva Vaveda.
He swore in this case, yes.
Yeah, he swore in this case. So since when you made the claim that you were a Shomer Chinam, you would have exempt yourself from responsibility in the case of Gneva Vaveda, and then it was found that really you were not a Shomer Chinam, you really stole it, you'd be obligated for the oath that you made, because we assume that which you would have saved yourself from responsibility in a case of Gneva Vaveda is significant, is considered as having monetary value to some degree. It's as if you've sworn falsely about something of value, and you're going to be obligated like a normal person who is kofir b'shvuah. Now, Shomer Sakhar Ani Alav, let's say you hadn't said you were an unpaid watchman, but you said you were a paid watchman, and then it's found that you were not, and you actually stole it, you'd be obligated also for violating your Shvua. Shrei Patar Atzmo Mishvura Umeta, because you tried to exempt yourself in cases of Shvura Umeta. A paid watchman would be exempt if the animal were to, or let's say a Kli or something you were watching became broken, or the animal died. You'd be exempt in such cases. So by claiming you were Shomer Sachar, you were trying to exempt yourself in certain cases. When it's found out that you're a Gazlan, you are obligated because you were denying something you lied in a Shvua about something of monetary value. And Shoal Ani Alav Chayav, if you said you were a borrower of this ox, you would also be obligated for violating your Shvua. Sharei Patar Atzmo Mimesa Machmas Melacha. Because you were trying to exempt yourself in a case where the animal, let's say, would die, when being used in the normal work. That an animal that dies, machmas malacha, a shoel, a borrower, is exempt from payment in such cases. So again, we're saying that you'd be obligated for lying about this shua because you were trying to exempt yourself in certain cases. That is considered to have value, and therefore it is if you falsely made a shua about something related to mammon. So that was Rabba's principle, that was Rabba's case. But the Gemara infers from there that Alma, afal gav, de hakayim. It's clear that according to Rabba, even though this object, let's say this ox in this case, is still present and still in your rishus, it's still in the world, came in the imignav mamona kakafar, hashtanami mamona kakafar, since if the object were to be stolen, it would be mamon and you'd have to pay. Therefore, when you made this false shvua about the animal, that's also considered a mamon. So we can apply from what would happen if something was stolen to the case of a shvua. And therefore, hachanami afagav the afra ba'almehu, the same is true in the case of chametz, which is what Rava asked about, and that's why it's a milta de pshitale le Rabba. Rabba knew what the answer would be to this question, but Rava asked this question, so we can infer from Rabba that in the case of chametz, even though the chametz is now chametz shavar lava pesach, and it's treated like dirt, it doesn't really have any value. Kevan d'imignav b'yishlumalei mamona me'alya, since if the chametz shavar lava pesach was stolen from you, you'd have to pay full money for it, and you can't just say, areishol chalafanecha, hashdanami mamona kakafirle. When you made this false shvua about it, that's considered a mamon. So what to Rava was a question was Pasha to Rava, and it sounds like to some degree the Gemara is using Rava to answer the question of Rava. That Rava didn't know the answer, but it's going to be the same thing that Rava said. And since Rava knew that the answer would be in this case, since if it would be stolen from you, it's treated as mamon. We treat it as mamon now when you make the shvua. That's the answer to Rava's question about chametz shavar lava pesach.
So if someone steals something which is osur b'hanah, there is an obligation to pay.
No, because in this case we're saying it wasn't osur b'hanah when you stole it. So if it was Aser
B'Hanah,
you stole before Pesach, so it's Mutar B'Hanah, and then it's Chametz Shavar Lava Pesach, so it's Aser B'Hanah. It relates back to what we were saying before, and the Gemara actually brought that point from Gazal Chametz Shavar Lava Pesach, right?
Yeah.
Came into Me'ikara Mamonahu B'Yishlumelei.
Yeah.
And so as we clarified before, again, what exactly the responsibility is going to be when you steal something which is Aser B'Hanah, we'd have to look into. But it sounds like in this case, the only reason you're obligated, even though it's Aser B'Hanah now, is because it used to have value. Yativ Rava, or perhaps the Girsa is Rava, Vikamar Lashmaita. Rava sat down and basically taught this entire statement that we just discussed. Now, Etive Rav Amram Le Rava. Rav Amram posed the question to Rava, and if you change the Girsa before to Rava, it's going to be Rava here also. Bechi Cheshba, if you lie about an item that you may have stolen, you're obligated, as we've been discussing. So, Pra Lemoda Be'ikr. That excludes a case where somebody is agreeing about the main item that they stole. And the Gemara is going to clarify exactly what that means. Ketzad, what's the case? Shori ganafta, vihu omer lo ganafti. Let's say a person says, you stole my ox. And the person responds, I did not steal your ox. So then the first person who's claiming that his ox was stolen responds, ma tibo etzlecha. So what are you doing with my ox? Why do you have my ox with you? So the person who is suspected of stealing says, Ata mechartoli, you sold it to me, or Ata netatoli b'matana, or you gave it to me as a gift. Avicha mecharoli, Avicha netatoli b'matana, your father sold it to me, or your father gave it to me as a gift. Achar paras yirats, he ran after my cow and ended up in my rishos, or me'elav ba'etzli, he just happened to come into my possession. Toa bederech mitzativ, or I found him lost on the way. The ox didn't know where he was going. Or shomer chinam ani alav, if he says he's an unpaid watchman for the ox. Or shomer sachar ani alav, I'm a paid watchman for the ox. Shoel ani alav, or he says that he borrowed the ox. Vinishba, and he made a shvua about it. And then vehoda, and then he admitted that he was lying and really he stole the ox. Yachol yehi chayav, you might think that you would be chayav in any of these cases. Talmud lomar v'chi cheshba pra lemoda be'ikr. But the pasuk says v'chi cheshba that you have to really lie about it prat lemoda be'ikr. That excludes a case where a person is agreeing about the main item that they're suspected of stealing. So how does that relate to our case? We're saying that if a person is moda about the chametz shel avra lava pesach, which is the ikr of what he stole it and he lied about it, but now he's admitting and he still has it, that should be the exact same case as the Brisa, which says that by moda be'ikr you're exempt. So why would we say that by chametz shavar lava pesach and extrapolating from the dinim of Rabba that you'd be obligated for the shvua that you made in such a case? This Brisa seems to indicate that you would not be obligated in these cases. So Amar Lei Tadura, Rabba responds to Rav Avram and he says Tadura, listen to the Shor Machshava, he explains exactly what that means. But Rashi says Ein Lev, that the person wasn't paying attention, wasn't thoughtful about the difference between these cases, wasn't thoughtful about the question that he poses, because Kitanya hihi de kamerle helach, Ki kamina tekaima ba'akam. The braisa that you're quoting to me about mode be'ikr is talking about a case where the person responds and says, here's the item, just take it back. He still has it in his possession. And therefore, you can't talk about what would happen if it was stolen because the item is still here. And that's why you're going to be exempt. The person is basically just giving the item back. And that's why they have no responsibility. But when Rava's question was posed, just one second, when Rava's question was posed, we're talking about a case where the item was lost, was by a swamp or something like that, in which case it would be different and it's possible that you'd be obligated. Let's just see Rashi. In a case where you say, Halach, Veleka Lememar, Ilu Mignav, the Kamekai Veshakile. My whole principle about Chametz Shabbat Lava Pesach was by inferring what would happen if the item was stolen, you'd be obligated to pay, and thus it's treated as money now. But this brisa, which you're quoting me, which should indicate that you'd be patur in the case of Chametz Shabbat Lava Pesach, is talking about a case where the item is still right here, and the person is saying, here's your item back, take it. So it says, Rashi, you can't talk about what would happen if the item was stolen, because the item is still here, and therefore you could just respond, go take it. But the case of Rava, where we're asking about Chametz Shabbat Lava Pesach, is asking about a case where the Chametz is lost in the world, it's somewhere by a swamp, not in our possession anymore, and that's why we could talk about what would happen when it was stolen, and would you be obligated to pay? Yeah.
Yeah, when the Gemara gives that previous example of the ox, how can you, first of all, how do you commingle your father gave it to me or he sold it to me with I found it wandering? There, when you say I found it wandering, that's Moed Beikar. But if he's saying it's mine because of a purchase, if he's saying it's mine, that's not a Moed.
That's Gemara's next question.
Gemara's going to ask you a question.
Oh. Yeah. Good. So ask the Gemara now exactly Moshe's question. If the person is claiming that you sold it to me, what type of mode be'ikr is there? He's not agreeing to the main claim that the person was making. So answers the Gemara, lo tzricha, the case where it would be mode be'ikr in a case of saying you sold it to me is de amarle, where the person who had this claim made against him says, lo natati lecha dami, I didn't give you the money for what you sold me, I never paid you, and therefore shkil torcha vizil, take your ox back and just leave. Ata, and then we have the same question about you gave it to me b'matana. Ata netatoli avicha netanoli my mode be'ikr ika. The person said you gave it to me as a gift, or your father gave it to me as a gift. What type of mode be'ikr is there? There, you're not agreeing to the main claim that's being made. So the Gemara answers, the Amrle Amanas, the Avina Lacha, Nayach de Nafsha, Velo Avi Lacha. When you gave it to me b'matana, when you gave it to me as a gift, it wasn't fully as a gift. Why? Because you said, I'm only giving it to you on condition that you're going to do something good for me in the future. And I didn't end up doing something good for you in the future. So I'm not really entitled to the gift that you gave me. And therefore, Shkil Torcha Vizil, take your ox back and leave. And also, Toa Baderach Mitzasiv, Lema, it's a vine. Gemara is done with that discussion now of how are these cases motive ikr. And the Gemara has a question about the case of Toa B'derech Mitzasiv. Toa B'derech Mitzasiv, Lema Yibaylech Ala Adurili. If the person's claim, which we brought in that Braisa, was that the ox happened to be lost on the way, and I basically found it as an Aveda, and that's how it came into my possession, then says the Gemara, the person who's claiming that his ox was stolen should say to this person who's saying, no, I just found it, that it was lost, you should have returned it to me, right? When you found it, you bring it into your house, you should have brought it back to me. So Amar Avua Dishmuel answered that the case must be where the person said, I just found it, lost on the way, is Ba'omer Shvua Aveda Matzasi, Velo Ayiti Yodea Shehishalcha Sha'achsir Analacha. The oath that the person made about this lost item was that I found a lost item, but I didn't know that it was yours, such that I should return it to you. So that's why the person is not obligated for just finding a lost item and not returning it. He didn't know whose it was to be able to return it. So the Torah tells us, if you're not sure, you should bring it into your possession until the person whose item it is seeks it out. So that's why he didn't return it, because he didn't know that it was his. Good. Now it says the Gemara Tanya, we have a braisa. Amar ben Azai, Gimel Shvuos Hein. There are three types of Shvuos when it comes to a Shvua about a lost item. What the Gemara really means is there are three types of knowledge that you could have about the lost item. Hikir ba velo bimotza. Let's say you recognize the item, but you don't recognize to whom it belongs. Or bimotza velo ba. Or you recognize the person to whom it belongs, but not the item. Lo ba velo bimotza. Or you don't recognize the item or the person to whom it belongs, So then the Gemara just interjects, lo bava, lo b'motza, kushta ishtaba. If you didn't recognize the item or the person to whom it belongs, then the oath that you made was a good oath, because what were you supposed to do? You didn't recognize anything about this item. There was nothing that you could have done. So the Gemara then clarifies, ema ba uvimotza. No, let's say that you recognize both the item and the person to whom it belongs. So then ask the Gemara, Lamai Hilchata, what are we saying, Lamai Naf Kamina, for what halacha are we saying that there are these three types of oaths about a lost item? So Rabbi Ami, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Liftor. Rabbi Ami says in the name of Rabbi Chanina that in these cases you'd be exempt from payment. If you made a shvua, you'd be exempt from responsibility. If you made a shvua about a lost item in such a way, you'd be exempt. Shmuel Amar Lechiv. And Shmuel says that you'd be obligated in such a case. Let's just see the Rashis to get some clarification on these cases. Sholosh Shvuos Hain, says Rashi. There are three types of Shvuos. Be'edus Aveda. Shishpia ta'ed im ra'ita et avedasi ve'amar la ve'achar kachoda. When it comes to testimony to a swear about a lost item, where a person makes the witness take an oath that he did not see the object, essentially, and the witness says he did not, and then he admits that he did see the object. So says Rashi, Hikir ba velo b'motza, ha'aveda, sha'amar shero ta'maleches b'rshus acheres, ve'eino yodea mihu. He says that he saw the object, but he wasn't sure to whom it belongs. Oh, hoda shehikir b'motza velo ba, or he says that he recognized the person to whom it belongs, but not really the item. V'hayal alomar ish ploni matza aveda, ve'eino yodea im shalchahu, uve'eir echad kamari. Or, let's say you know the person who found the item, and you say, I saw that some person found an item, but I wasn't sure if it was your item. So, Al kulan niftur. According to Rabbi Ami Amar B'Chanina, you're going to be exempt in all these cases. Al kulan pater aid. But Shmuel would say that you're chayav. So the Gemara says that this machlokas, Rabbi Ami, in the name of Rabbi Chanina, in Shmuel, is really a machlokas tanaim. But plukta dahani tanai. Titania, hamashpia eid echad pater, Rabbi Lazib, Rabbi Shimon, bechayev. The Brisa says that according to Tanakama, if you make a single aid, make an oath, that aid would be exempt. And Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon would say that that aid is obligated. So, with my kamiflagi, what's this machlokas tanakam and Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon? Chayev. It sounds like you'd be chayev for the normal dinim of shua. Meaning, the question is an aid echad who makes a shua about an item obligated for payment or for the whole process of shua sabikadon if he's only a single aid and he couldn't necessarily require the person to pay back? Let's see Rashi. Hamashbia aid echad, the kafar va'amar shvuah she'eino yodea lecha eidos. Let's say the aid says, I didn't know any eidos about your case. Meaning, a person is claiming, let's say Reuven says, Levi owes me $100, and he's making Shimon make an oath that he doesn't know any testimony about this dispute between Reuven and Levi.
So since he's only one aid, he wouldn't have solved
He wouldn't have solved the case. Exactly. Right? So we're talking about Shuvah Sa'edus, rather. And Rashi says, Patar Ha'ed mi Korban Shuvah Sa'edus. You'd be exempt from bringing a Korban on Shuvah Sa'edus. Taha yihaba masid le, lo haba m'chayav leha'eich el Shuvah. If Shimon were to testify that Levi owes $100, let's say, to Reuven, he couldn't require Levi to pay because he's only an Eid Echad. All he could have required Levi to do is to make a Shuvah. And even though you could say that maybe Levi won't make that oath, Gorim lemamon pater, the haninami gorim lemamon in here. This eid echad would only be a gorim lemamon, meaning it's possible that he could end up causing Levi to have to pay Reuven, but he can't directly cause Levi to have to pay Reuven because he's only a single aid, and therefore the Tanakama would say when you're mashpia eid echad, when you're only making one aid make an oath, and his testimony would not be sufficient to complete the case, then it's only a davar hagorim lemamon and your pater. But Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon would say that in Mashbia Eid Echad is Chayav because it's Goreim Lamamon is Kimamun Dami. That which he could lead the case to end up requiring Levi to pay Reuven $100 is considered like real monetary value. And therefore, the Eid Echad who made the Shvuah Sa'edus, who said, I don't have any testimony about your case, but it was lying, and really he did have testimony about this case, would be obligated.
He'd be obligated for Karen, Chaimish, and Anoshim?
Yeah, seemingly. For the general requirements of Shua Seid, it's good. Amar Rav Sheshas, says Rav Sheshas, HaKofer b'pikadon nasa alav gazlan v'chayav v'onsin. If someone lies about a deposit that was given to them, they become like a gazlan, it's as if they've stolen the deposit, and you'd be chayav v'onsin, you'd be obligated for any onsin, anything bad which happens to this item, against your will. V'tana tuna, v'chi cheshba, we have a braisa which supports this principle of Rav Sheshes, because the pasuk says that you lie about something, lamanu onesh, so we learn the punishment for somebody who lies in such a case, right? Rashi says, because the pasuk then says, v'heshev is akzeila, so alma kamale b'shusei, mishas v'kichesh, adav rashava, v'zeu onsha. When you lie about this item, it comes into your rishus, it's considered as if you've stolen it, and you have to return it. So you see from the pasuk, v'chi cheshba, what the punishment would be from somebody who lies, for somebody who lies about property, ashara minayin, but where's the warning that somebody should not do this? Talmud lomar, lo techachashu. The pasuk which warns you not to do this is the pasuk of lo techachashu, don't, right, it's the exact same language as v'chi cheshba, don't lie about this property. So my love, la'onesh mamon, when we say onesh, when we say that v'chi cheshba teaches us the punishment, aren't we saying that's the punishment of payment that you'd have to make for lying about this item? Says the Gemara, lo, la'onesh shvua. It's not the punishment of mamon, but it's the punishment that you'd have for the shvua. Says Rashi, hai onesh da'an sheikra, lis chai ba'onsin, mishum shvua sheker hi, aval ilo ishtaba lo. The requirement that you're obligated in onsin is only if you make a shvua. But it's not if you just deny the claim. So this braisa doesn't support Rav Sheshes, because Rav Sheshes was talking about hakofer b'pikadam, that as soon as you lie about the item, you become responsible for own sin. But the Gemara's response to the braisa is not a support, because the braisa would only indicate that you'd be obligated if you make a shvua. It says the Gemara, that doesn't make any sense, because hamini tani seifa v'yishtaba v'val the reisha d'lo yishtaba. Since the seifa of this braisa talks about a shvua, it must be that when the reisha talks about your obligation, it's not talking about a shvua. The tani seifa v'nishbal sheker, the seifa of the braisa, at the end of the braisa says, if you make a false oath, lamanu onesh, so we learn the punishment for making a false oath. Says Rashi, t'chtiv batrei chomesh v'asham, because the pasuk goes on to say that you're obligated to pay an extra fifth of the principal, and you're obligated to bring a korban asham. So we know the punishment for making an oath falsely, but as hara minayin, what's the warning that you're not supposed to make a false oath? Lo tishakru. Talmud lomar lo tishakru, because the pasuk says, don't lie. Umi de seifa de yishtaba, reisha de lo yishtaba. And since the seifa is talking about where you made an oath, it must be that the reisha is not talking about where you made an oath, because that would be redundant. And therefore, Rav Sheshet actually does have a good support to his principle. That where you lie about the pikadon, you become a gazlan and you're obligated in onsen. And that's talking just about where you lie, not where you make a shvua, because the seifa of the braisa is talking about where you make a shvua. So answers the Gemara, Amri, idi v'idi d'ishtaba. Really, both cases, both parts of the braisa are talking about where you made a shvua. Kan shehoda, kan shebo eidim. And they're talking about different cases. One case is talking about where you admit on your own that you lied. In one case is talking about where eidim come and testify that you are lying about the oath that you made. Atu edim chayav be'onsin. If edim come, you'd be obligated in onsin. And oduye odi chayav be'keren b'chomesh ba'asham. If you're moda on your own, then you'd be obligated in keren b'chomesh ba'asham. But it sounds like the Gemara's conclusion at the end of the day is that Rav Sheshes doesn't have a good support to his principle that if you just lie about the object, you immediately become a gazlan and you're obligated in any onsin that occurred to the item, because the braisa, which seemed to indicate that maybe you would be obligated in onsin, was only talking about where you made a shvuah and not talking about where you just lied. Now, Motiv Rami Bar Chama, Rami Bar Chama poses a question, Ushekenegdo Chashid al Hashvuah. There's a principle in general, Rashi fills in some of the details, that in general we assume that anybody who makes a shvuah is making a shvuah to exempt themselves from payment. Kol ha nishpa'in, nishpa'in ve'inan mishalmin, that people who make an oath are making the oath to exempt themselves from payment. But there are a few cases where that's not true, where the elu nishba'in v'notlin, where certain people make an oath, and that oath entitles them to collect rather than just exempting them from having to pay. And there are certain reasons why we would have required the other party to make the oath, and that's why they would make the oath and be exempt from payment, but we can't let that party make the oath for certain reasons. The Gemara is going to discuss, and the Gemara discusses elsewhere. We're going to see one of the cases in a second. But where the person who would be making an oath to exempt themselves from payment is not allowed to make that oath, the oath then switches to the other party, which means the person who's making the oath is going to be making the oath and collecting. So one of the people who makes an oath and collects is Ushekenegdo Chashid al Hashvuah, if the other person is not believed about Shvuos, that they've lost their Ne'amanos, they've lost their believability when it comes to Shvuos, they have no credibility. So Ketzad, says the Gemara, what's the case of Ushekenegdo Chashid al Hashvuah? Echad Shvuos Ha'edis ve'echad Shvuos Ha'pikadon ve'afilu Shvuah Shav. That could apply to all three types of Shvuos, whether it would be a Shvuah about Edis, that you know some Edis about me, whether it be a Shvuos Ha'pikadon, that you were watching my item, you stole my item, etc., or even just a regular, normal shvuas shav. V'imisa b'kfirehu de'ifsale. If it's true that Rav Sheshes hakofer b'pikado nase alav kigazlan, that you automatically become a gazlan when you are kofer, why do we have to say that it's when you're chashid ala shvua that the other person makes the oath and collects money, rather than you making the oath and not having to pay? You should become already puzzled to make a shvua just from kfira, because Rav Sheshes holds that kfira without a shvua, just denying the claim without making, denying the claim falsely without making a shvua, is enough to obligate you in payment for the item for onsen. So when it comes to the other person making the oath, kfira alone should also make the other person have to make the oath. So answers the Gemara, Amri, Hachamai, Eskinon, Dekai Be'adam, Delav Kfira, Tesavar, Ishtamitnale, Adazilna, Umaitinale. The case where we're assuming that if you were just to be kofer, that would not make you ineligible to make an oath, is where the item that you're being kofer about is by the swamp. In which case, it's not a real kfira. Meaning, the brisa, which says you're only not able to make a shvua if you lie about a shvua, but not if you lie about, if you're just kofer, is not comparable to Rav Sheshes' case. Because it's assuming that the kfira that you did is not a real kfira. Why? Because the item was over in some swamp somewhere. And when you said, I don't have the item, you weren't really denying the claim fully. What you really intended to say, or at least in your heart of hearts, you were saying, I know the item is over there somewhere, and hopefully I'll just get rid of this guy for now, and then I'll go find the item and I'll bring it back to him. So that's not a real kfira, and that's why we don't treat you as choshed al shvua just on the basis of that kfira. Teida, and I can prove to you that that's what's going on here, that the kfira is not a real kfira. The Amar of Edi Bar Oven, Hakofer Bemilve Kasher Le'edus. Because of Edi Bar Oven says that if you lie about a loan that you have, you'd still be Kasher Le'edus. Why? Because we don't assume that it's a real kofir, it's not a real kfira, it's not real lying, since, as Rashi explains, milvah lehotzah nina, we assume when you give somebody a loan, you're giving it to them to use the money, that's why they're taking out the loan, and thus they're not expected to have the item with them. We assume the $100 that you gave them as a loan is out there in the world and they can use it freely, and they just have to return a different $100 back to you later. So when you say, you lost my loan, well, that's not a kfira to say, no, I didn't, because they were expected to use the loan. But bepikadon, pasul le'edus. If you're kofar about a deposit, if you're kofar about something that somebody gave to you, which is not lotza anina, and you're not supposed to use it, that would actually be a good kfira. So I think the support that the Gemara is bringing is from the case of milveh, that since milveh is an item that you're supposed to use, we don't treat that as a real kfira. The same would be true about the case of shekenegdo chashed al shvua, when someone is not believed about their oath. So don't pose a question to Rav Sheshes and say they should already not be believed because they lied about the item. We're talking about a case where it was not a real lying, just like when somebody lies about a milveh. Okay, we'll hold it over here.
Thank you.